Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome, everybody, to the Really 007 podcast for another look at the wonderful James Bond books. Now, this time, we're focusing on filming at Nene Valley Railway. And author Mark Hernandez has written a marvellous book chronicling those who were involved with the shoots there for Octopussy and Goldeneye. So there are various places you can find our podcast to listen in and follow, including YouTube, iTunes and Spotify. And we've got a website on our Pod Dojo network. Thanks for sharing, rating, listening, and recommending all our episodes. We can also be found on social media at Facebook, Twitter, or X as it's known now, and Instagram. So get in touch with us there. So tonight I'm going to give a special shout out to a chap called Johnny Crown. Brilliant name. Now he's a huge Bond fan and he's been a terrific contributor to our Facebook page. So shout out to you, Johnny. Right. Well, Mark, we're here with you today to discuss your wonderful book, On the Train Tracks, which I've got with me here.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. So the book focuses on filming at Nene Valley Railway. And we've mentioned for both those films, Octopussy and Goldeneye. We've just had the 40th anniversary of Octopussy. And Mark's book brings together so many behind-the-scenes stories, really, of those who had small parts and large parts in contributing to these two classic Bond films. So yes, Mark, first of all, yourself. You're a Bond fan. That we've got to ask everybody.
Yes. Yeah. I'm a bit of a Bond fan, I'd say. I'm an ardent Bond fan, you know, like, you know, I think you have to be to do anything like this, you know, whether it's, you know, a podcast like you guys do or a book or something like this, anything that, you know, involved in fandom and, you know, the Bond fan community, the BFC, as nobody calls it apart from me. but yeah, you know, I've written this book that goes in the sort of details, enunciating details, some might say, the goings on, the filming of basically the train scenes from Octopussy and Goldeneye that were filmed at Nene Valley Railway, which, you know, I grew up around the railway. So it just sort of goes into, yeah, those stories. So that's what the meat and drink of the book is, really.
To those of us who aren't from the UK or beyond, or even in the UK, can you tell us whereabouts the Nene Valley Railway runs from and to?
Yeah, sure. So the Nene Valley Railway is a heritage railway site, and it's sort of situated on the outskirts of Peterborough. So it's sort of in the sort of part of sort of East Anglia, that which is where Peterborough is. But what the unusual thing about the Nene Valley Railway is that originally it was part of a much longer railway. So in the sort of, you know, the 1800s, when railways cropped up all around the UK, as you know, there was the original railway opened in the 1840s, and it was the original Nene Valley Railway line was sort of a 47-mile stretch of railway that went from Northampton across the country to Peterborough. Then when it sort of closed in the sort of 1950s, 1960s, early 70s, different sort of stretch. It sort of got smaller and smaller until the sort of the last sort of stretch that was kind of open was this sort of stretch that ran sort of 7 miles into the outskirts of Peterborough. So it sort of starts in the railway is like 7.5 miles long. It's kind of situated in sort of rural Northamptonshire, and then it goes in fact into sort of three counties, which is quite unusual. So it starts sort of in Northamptonshire, goes into a little bit of Lincolnshire, and finishes in Cambridgeshire. People in the UK, when you tell anyone that the Neam Valley Railway is in Peterborough, because that's sort of where the postcode is, you know, immediately if people have heard of Peterborough, they've you know maybe heard of it because the football team, there's a lower league football team the town kind of has. Peterborough is one of those places, one of those kind of, it's like a small town, or it's a city, well, it's a city, but it was a small town up until the sort of like the 1960s when it became sort of like an overspill town, a new town. It was given new town status, so similar to sort of Milton Keynes. So Peterborough, and it sort of grew from there. So it became sort of like an overspill town from sort of London, because it's, you know, within an hour by train and a little bit longer by road. So that's a little bit of background of where it is.
Of course, we said it's featured on Octopussy first and then Goldeneye. The location's quite good because it's, like you say, not too far from London. And is it fair? How far from, like, Pinewood is it?
Pinewood, it's about, I think it's about 80 miles by road. So it's, you know, one of the reasons, you know, I'll go into a little bit how much detail I don't know you want me to go into, but of the reasons it was chosen for Octopussy is, you know, this, it was like 1982, so it was the year before the film came out when they filmed it. The railway had been open as a heritage railway line in 1977, when all these local men and women who, you know, had this, you know, been sort of local train spotters, and some of them had worked on the main railway network, wanted to basically start their own, you know, have their own railway to sort of preserve, you know, this age of steam, like so many other sort of heritage railways up and down the country. And so 1977 it opened. In 78 it was used by the BBC as a filming location. And what sort of attracted the BBC and then also E.ON when they came is, at the time when it opened, it was the only heritage railway site in the UK that was able to run continental style coaches and locomotives. So it was the only place that had these. So that's obviously what attracted E.ON to it, because it meant they could, you know, 80 miles from Pinewood, they could easily, you know, get the crew up here and everything, rather than all the logistics of not, you know, if they just wouldn't have been able to film it for real in Germany, which is what the railway was kind of set as. As you know, in Octopussy, it's used as Karl Marx Stadt in Octopussy, isn't it? So that's the railway. But yeah, so it's always been a kind of, you know, a little bit of a kind of, I suppose, like an in joke that it's, you know, this was it a good advertisement for the railway and for the city, the fact that they were making out that it was like East Germany, that it was, you know, dull and grey and industrial and all the rest of it. But, you know, they made it work. You know, E.ON made it work. The real driving force and the person who did the recces and came up to the railway was Pete Lamont. He was the production designer. You know, I was fortunate to meet him on several occasions, and he was the one who, you know, came up to the railway, was really impressed with the setup, and also the good thing that the railway had, because it was only, it's 7.5 miles long now. When they filmed Octopussy, it was only 5. So it was extended slightly further after Octopussy. But in the film, it looks much longer. It doesn't look as though it's a 5 mile length of track. And what Pete Lamont realised when he came up to do the recce is he was shown this wonderful, called like a railway turntable. If you can imagine, I don't know how much you know about railways, but a turntable, basically you put the carriages on and you can turn them very quickly. So it meant that they could film in different directions on the track in the film to make basically the track look longer than it was. So that was, you know, like a key thing for Peter, and one of the reasons why they picked the railway, along with the fact that they'd got all these wonderful continental engines that were very similar to what would have been running in sort of, you know, East Germany at the time. So that was the reason why it was picked.
Because obviously the plot of Octopussy, it's set, some of it's set in, well, Russia at the beginning. Then you've got Berlin, which of course was occupied, that side, one side of East Berlin, is occupied by the Soviets. And then, you know, you've got the rest in India. So it's quite, it's unusual that you've got so many different locations, but it is impractical to film all that in, you know, in Soviet Russia, Soviet Germany.
That's right. I mean, what's interesting when you look, I mean, you guys did that, you know, wonderful review of the film. I think was it your first one that you ever did?
Yeah, the very first episode.
It's like the four-parter. And then obviously last year when the film was, you know, those are great episodes, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I re-listened to some of it this week. What's fantastic about, there's so much, you know, great stuff about the railway and about the scenes in there. So the first time you actually see the sort of Neem Valley, it's not the actual railway that you see. So in the sort of the post, what's it called? After the title song, what's that section called?
Yeah, the credit sequence. Yeah, the title.
Yeah, the credit. The credit sequence with 009 escaping from Mishka and Grishka. So they film that in several different places. They start off in East Berlin. So you see that they've put up this, you know, tent near the border, near the wall. So he escapes from that. Then part of it, then it cuts to Black Park, so down in Pinewood. And then the part when they're chasing him and they reach the gate and he's climbing over the weir. There's like a lock bridge. He's climbing over when they throw the knife in his back and he falls back into the water. That sequence was filmed at Neem Valley. So there was a lock just behind the railway and they filmed that sequence there with, you know, David and Tony Mayer and Andy Bradford as 009. So again, that's another little bit that I think when they came to, you know, look at the railway, they did the wrecking, they realised what they, you know, looking around, what else is around here. Yeah. They realise, oh, this would be a good bit to shoot. So that when you think about it, in reality, that's quite a long chase. It starts off in East Germany, and then it goes to Pinewood, then up to Peterborough, and then back down to fall through the ambassador's reception.
Yes. Of course, that bit as well. We've spoken to Andy Bradford, and we've also spoken to the Mayer twins about it. And
fantastic.
It does seem to be such a iconic scene. We keep saying to everybody, you've had a fairly jovial intro, a very old school Bond saving the day. And then it cuts right into this deadly serious chase. Instantly you think, well, no, there's a clown, so is it silly? But then, no, it's very, very serious very quickly. And there was a 40th anniversary celebration, wasn't it? Like a sort of event at Neem Valley this summer.
I
couldn't go, unfortunately, but I saw pictures of Andy Bradford and the Mayer twins, and they were sort of reenacting that scene almost. Is that right?
they were. We got them. I was involved in that. I don't know how much you know. That was an event that was sort of put on by Martin Mulder, who runs on the tracks of 007. There's a whole massive story about how that kind of came about. But basically, I'd been to the Honor Majesty's 50th anniversary in Switzerland.
Oh, wow.
Up at Piz Gloria, which I can't tell you how good that was. It was just the ultimate. It was just incredible. It was just one of those weekends that, you know, along with, you know, getting married and the birth of my kids, it was just fantastic. And I think as time goes on, it becomes even more memorable for, you know, cue the music and the fact that the James Bond of the film, George Lazenby, was there and some of the other, the, you know, surviving, you know, cast and crew members. And there was a moment where I was outside at Piz Gloria. It was in the interval, in fact, when Cue the Music had a little break. Martin was out there and I sort of jokingly said to him, now, this is great, but when are you going to do something at Neem Valley? And he was like, what are you talking about? Kind of thing. And I sort of, you know, we had a little laugh and a kind of like where they did Octopus. Yeah, I know. He told me. And, you know, we kept in touch and, you know, through lockdown. And that's really how the book came about.
Yes.
You know, I had this idea for the book. I'd had all these interviews in lockdown. That was when I sort of put this book together. And I sort of envisaged that we'd do, you know, maybe like a little, you know, like a small launch, nothing too big. But then Martin said, no, we're going to do an event. So I was just immediately thinking, I don't know, I can't see how people are, you know, people are going to come to this. You know, he sent it out in the newsletter, you know, Last year we went to the Bahamas. In this Easter we're going to Tokyo for you only live twice, and then we're going to Peterborough in England. I'm thinking, oh my goodness. But look, the bit round the weir, that was something that in lockdown, that location is the nearest place to where I live. So it's walkable. It's like a half an hour walk. So during lockdown, when, you know, we were allowed to sort of, you know, have like daily exercise, you know, seems like a million years away in some ways, other ways it's very, you know, recent. And I'd go up there. It used to be one of the places I'd go to because it was the river and it was the water, and I'd walk up there. And I can remember thinking to myself when I was up there at one point, you know, when all this is over, it'd be great to come up here with some Bond fans, you know. Yeah. But I've seen people had been up there in, you know, in small groups, two or three. But when we realised that we had this opportunity to have like this big group, you know, 100, 120 people up there, and that we could get the Mayer twins back there, I realised that there was this opportunity to get Andy Bradford there, and we could sort of create something really special for everybody. Because when Martin had done the Piz Gloria trip, or the Honor Majesty's 50 trip before Piz Gloria, they'd done this reenactment over in Portugal with George Lazenby and Terry Mountain on the beach in Portugal. So I had that kind of in my mind, thinking, okay, look, this isn't as iconic because it's not Portugal, but this is the next best thing. And it was one of those things that I'd kind of, you know, sometimes when you think, people are going to go for this? Are people going to be interested? Do you know what I mean? And you just don't know. But in my head, I kind of thought, if we can get this right, it's going to be wonderful. And I'd interviewed Andy before and I'd met him before. And we kind of tried to sort of keep Andy's involvement a little bit of a secret, because we didn't want to announce, oh, we're going to do this thing.
Yes.
In case for some reason we couldn't, it wouldn't happen, because then, you know, people's expectations would be disappointed. So everybody on the trip knew that the Mayer twins were going to be there. But with Andy Bradford, they knew he was going to be at the weekend, but they didn't know when, they didn't know how. Yeah. And because Andy, when I talked to him about it, what was great, I sort of said, look, be great if you just, you know, and he doesn't look when you interview him, because obviously he's in the film, he's in clown makeup. Yeah. Now, you know, 40 years later as well, he's, you know, he's changed. He's not as recognizable as some of the other actors. And he kind of, you know, he turned up and he was just in, you know, in jeans and a top and a little hat, little sort of beanie hat. And when I met him at the railway, he said to me, Mark, I should have brought a clown nose, like a red nose. And I just put my hand in my pocket and went, here you go. And he was like, fantastic. And he was like, oh, that's brilliant. And he said, the only thing is, Mark, he said, my wife said to me before I came up here, she said, for God's sake, Andy, whatever you do, do not try and do any stunts or show off or do anything. And I said, look, Andy, no one's expecting you to do, you know, diving in the, no one's expecting that at all. They're just, you know, for you to be here is enough to have a photo and all the rest of it. And Andy was really gracious, because when Tony and David came, one of the things they'd said to me is that, you know, as well as, you know, being in these films, that they're big, and you'll know this from interviewing them, that part of their main part of their career was working in the theatre.
Yes. Yeah.
And they said something on the night before when we met them that really stuck in my head. And they said they missed performing in front of an audience.
Yeah.
And I realised when we got down to the rail, when we got down to this spot where the gate was, we'd managed to get the people who owned the gate, we'd got it open. They stood there, and what you don't realize in the film is that it's kind of like it's kind of sort of like on a slant, sort of as you go down to the gate. So what it meant is you'd got like 100 people sort of backed up, almost like, you know, sort of like tiered up there, all with their phones, cameras, and the two of them are there and the flat camera. And they just, as soon as they saw that, it was just something special. They were, you know, taking pictures of them with people behind them and vice versa. Andy, nobody realized, but Andy just let them have this moment with everybody. And then all of us, you know, and then quietly, he just like walked up. They'd sort of had a little bit of a chat beforehand, but the fact that they were then, all three of them were back at this location for the first time in over 40 years, they were hugging. And then Andy put the nose on, he turned around to everybody, and suddenly it kind of clicked with everybody what was kind of happening. And then Andy, bless him, I said, can we just clear a path so Andy can walk up and everyone can get a picture with him up to the lock? He went up there. And the next thing I know, Tom, he's like looking at the lock bit and he's almost, you know, I can see him doing it and he's going to do 1, 2, 3. Where can he put his hand and his feet? Boom, boom, boom. And he's up. He's up and he's hanging off. The water's underneath him. He's hanging off with sort of two, standing there with like one hand pulling, you know, doing a face. And then you've got the assistant director, Anthony Way, who's just standing there. Terry Madden, who was involved in the original second unit bit when they filmed it. John Glenn's just a little bit away as well. And they're all, it was just one of those moments that you kind of think, oh, this is what being a Bond fan's about, you know, being able to do this. And how nice that these guys are so appreciative and so willing to do that. So when Andy did that, before we went up there, he kind of said to me, I said, all I need you to do is walk up. And he went, I think I can do a little bit more than that. And then he went and did this. So what is he doing all that? When he came off, I called, don't worry, Andy, I won't tell your wife. I'm taking a picture. That was something that was really special. And I think that meant a lot to kind of like a lot of people. And also it sort of, to me, it was like, it was one of those bits that made the weekend and something that everybody who was there kind of almost, because when you do these events, as you know, that you know, they're not something, it's not, you know, when you go to these things that they're not overly expensive, but there is a cost kind of to them. And you want people to feel like they're getting their money's worth. You don't, the last thing you want is to kind of think that, oh, here we go. What have I paid for here? This isn't I could just do this anytime. I could do anything. And I think that was what was good about this, because normally, as you know, when you go to these events, you know, these conventions and things, it's very much, they'll sit behind a table, you know, everybody will queue up, autographs and stuff. But we wanted to try to make it a little bit more kind of interactive and just everybody kind of be together. And I think that really, you know, is what kind of made it. And I think that, again, it's sort of, there's details in the book about this location, but yeah, Octopussy, the 40th anniversary, to be able to celebrate it, you know, different people, everybody's, you know, across the country, people have been celebrating it, whether it's in the cinema, having events. But it was great to sort of, you know, have, you know, different people from the, you know, the Bond fan community, you know, come and be part of it. And yeah, that was a special moment, having those, you know, the three of them back together at that particular location, because it is like, it's a brilliant bit in the film, and the more that you watch it, the more that you kind of, you know, appreciate. And it's 009.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, in a strange way, I know that saying again going on, but there was somebody there, there was a fan, I think they must have been either from Germany or Switzerland. But when they saw the three of these guys together, this voice, I always remember hearing this voice saying, Mishka and Grishka are making their peace with 009.
Oh, right.
So it was just like this really, you know, it was almost like, you know, because look, in the film, you know, we know what happens to all three of them. They don't make it to the end credits. So the fact that we're able to, you know, relive that bit and gives us all a little bit of hope that if we can bring them back from the dead, you know, if Barbara's listening to this, you know, and wants any tips of how you bring somebody back.
Bring the character back. What other franchise have fans which are so committed that they can somehow reenact a famous scene in the location with the director, with the assistant director, the stuntman, the performers?
It was off. Yeah. It was beyond, you know, it was beyond what I thought. I just thought, oh yeah, we might get, you know, just be, you know, a couple of, you know, normally when you have things like this, you know, it's us guys who are dressing up and, you know, pretending to be, you know, oh yeah, I'll get a waistcoat and a red tunic and all the rest of it. But the fact that you've got the original and they're, you know, that they're willing to kind of like do that and go along with it, because they, you know, they, A, how much it meant to them as in terms of their careers and what they see it means to the fans as well. It's special. And that's what makes, you know, James Bond just such an incredible, this cultural phenomenon that we've, you know, we've all grown up with, and why we're, you know, why we're talking today about it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You also had some Bond girls there, didn't you? Including Magda from Octopussy.
Yes. Yeah, Magda. Yeah, we had Magda. Magda was Christina Weyborn. Yeah, she was, just wonderful. Christina is, I wish that somebody had told me before just how nice she was. Oh. Because there was nothing, you know, you hear these stories about, you know, Roger that nothing was, you know, he never refused an autograph or a photograph or anything like that. Christina was exactly the same. And brilliant. I think having her there, unfortunately, Maud Adams was sent a lovely message. She wasn't able to attend. She sent a lovely video message that was played at the evening event. And I've got to give credit, you know, to this whole event. Martijn Mulder organised the event. I helped him with it. My friend Del Singh, who you know, tied the turban for Kibit
well.
Bedi. Yeah, Del played a huge part in organising the weekend. And also Anders Free from Sweden with Love. Anders was sort of the guy who kind of brought all the Bond sort of alumni together. And sort of so Anders was instrumental in that, in getting the guys that we had there, including Christina. And we had a couple of the other Bond girls were there, Alison Worth, Safira Afzal, and Helene Hunt as well. So that was really nice. And although she didn't film this at the railway, Christina did two really great things. The first thing she did is when we arrived and we had some like local press doing the photographs there, what I'd done, and it's probably the best £4.99 I've ever spent, I bought some Swedish flag bunting. And one of the locomotives that was in Octopussy is still at the railway. It's not in sort of service at the moment. It sort of stands as like the gate guardian, but it's the locomotive train that was used in the head-on smash with the Mercedes in the film. So it was like the express train. It was a Swedish locomotive. So we put Swedish bunting up on the rail of it to welcome Christina almost. As soon as she saw that and the press came out to do the photograph, she said, I want to get up there. So we've got this, you know, she was climbing up this huge to get on top of the train to pose for like photographs. And you've got, John Glenn was standing there sort of looking up thinking, you know, I heard him call out and say, for goodness sake, Christina, don't jump.
Yeah.
Like that. And, you know, and some of the, you know, the railway staff were looking, thinking, oh, is this, you know, health and safety? Should we be letting this, you know, this woman climb up on, you know, this isn't really normal kind of practice. But Andy Bradford was there and said, like, it's okay, we've got one of the stunt guys here, so it's all safe. We're all okay. Kind of thing, but that was really great. And then the other good thing that the other nice thing that she did is there's a scene that they filmed, I think, down at the RAF base in Hayford, is it down in Oxfordshire, where they filmed the circus scenes in the film when the train arrives. There's a little scene where you see her juggling some tennis balls.
She's dressed
in the circus mistress outfit. She did that. She was juggling tennis balls on the train station, and everybody was, you know, taking photographs and everything. And we'd got a top hat and things. And so that was great. You know, again, she didn't have to do all this.
Up to now, you are the least lethal and by far the prettiest of Kamau's friends that I've come across.
Thank you.
So does he have a proposition for me, or do you?
He suggests the trade. The egg for your life.
Well, I'd heard the price of eggs was going up, but isn't that a little high?
Charge it to, room?
Oh, 27. Along with the champagne, I suppose.
I leave it at the desk. You don't mind.
Why, has Kamau forgotten what I look like already?
It's for me.
So that if I should depart this world, suddenly you'll have something to remember me by.
Something like that. It's for my scrapbook. I collect memories.
Well, let's get on with making a few.
And look, we all know how fantastic John Glenn is.
Yeah.
You know, you've met him, you've interviewed him. I thought when he came, he might just come for a couple of hours, sit on the train, up and down with his sons. They were with him. Then he'd go back to the hotel, get ready for the meal. He was all in. He wanted to come down to all the locations with everybody. You know, it was a blazing hot day. They got, you know, his sons got him a hat. So he was, you know, out the sun kind of thing. But yeah, he was there from, you know, start to finish. And in the evening, he was, you know, even his sons were like looking at their watch thinking, God, we want to go to, but come on, Dad. You know, he was one of the last to go to bed as well. So he was, you know, properly, properly enjoyed it, and rightly so, because look, you John's contribution to this series is just, it's just off the scale. And I think this year, and I think everything also as well, everything that we've all been through the last couple of years, and I think because of where the Bond series is at the moment, it's in this sort of little bit of this hiatus.
Yeah.
People are looking, you know, we're looking forward in one way, but also we're looking back at what we've got, and really appreciating that, look, there's this body of work that we've got, and John's involvement with it is just unbelievable, isn't it?
Massively.
The whole 80s belongs to him, and then the stuff that he did on Moonraker and Spy Who Loved Me, and then going all the way back to on Her Majesty's. And, yeah, you know, again, one of these people that would just embraces what Bond is, embraces, you know, his contribution to it, and also the fan side of it as well. So, to have him back was special. And there was one bit where I even heard him say at the end of the weekend to his sons, oh, I'll have to get Janine to bring me back up here. There's a couple of nice places I want to see on the way. So it's great. It's great that, you know, he still wants to be involved, and the fact that we're all able to, you know, appreciate and let him know as well what he means to us.
Action. This is John Glenn. You're listening to Really 007 Podcast.
The book, basically.
Yes.
The idea for the book start, because it's sort of like a local history book, isn't it? As well as a James Bond book, as well as a filmmaking book. There are so many stories from so many different people. I can't even begin to know how it started, how it's compiled. How many people are in here? There's loads.
it's a big cast list, isn't it? I guess how it kind of started is I had this idea that I wanted to do a book about the railway. I'd written for the railway magazine, Neen Steam. I used to get that when I was a kid. I've got here the issue that was from 1982 with Rogers on the cover, and I reference this in the book. And every time there's been a sort of like an anniversary of the Bond film, the railway haven't really known what to do about it. They've not really celebrated it for various reasons. And I just had this idea, I think, leading up to the railway's 40th anniversary in 2017, I had this idea it would be great if we could get some of the people involved back to the railway for the railway's 40th anniversary. So that's really how this sort of started. And what I did is I got a poster, like an Octopussy film poster. And the idea was I was going to find all the railway men and women, as many as I could find, some of who I knew, and get them just to sign it, and just with a little brief description of what they did in the film, how they were involved with it. You know, they were one of the drivers on the train, or they were a guard, or they were an extra, or whatever it was. But I soon realized when I went down to sort of see them and track these people down, and you sat down and you talked to them, like we're talking now, everybody had like this really unique story about something they saw, something they did, their involvement when they encountered Roger or Walter Gertel or Stephen Berkoff. And I just thought, these stories are great. And so I just, you know, have my voice recorder on, and I just on my phone, and I just recorded them. And I thought, I need to do something with this. And it wasn't then until lockdown, when suddenly I've got a little bit more sort of spare time on my hands, that I just thought, right, I need to do this. I need to put this all together, you know, tell the story of the railway, but also of the Bond films. Because, you know, the railway has been used in a lot of different pieces of, you know, TV and film and commercials over the years, but it's Bond that, you know, the selling point to this book, I tell people when I've sort of talked to people about it, why is the railway important? Two James Bond films, one Ian Fleming biopic, and a drinks commercial starring a future 007. That, you know, there's no other film location apart from probably Pinewood that kind of, you know, that's got, kind of got that. You know, normally if they go to somewhere.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
It's like a one-time location, or maybe they'll go back and film something else there. But the fact that it's got this, there's the Bond connection, also this slight, it's a bit of a tenuous link, but they did film Secret Life of Ian Fleming, Spy Maker with Jason Connery. They filmed the train scenes at the railway at Neen Valley, and there's details and bits and pieces about that in the book as well that I touch upon as well.
We mentioned John Glenn. He's done the foreword. I mean, that's
yes.
itself, isn't it, getting John to contribute to it?
Yeah, that was fantastic. You know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I kind of, me and Martin went back and forth on this about, should we put on the front of the book that John had written, that the foreword was by John? And because normally on a book like that, you'll have the foreword on there. We sort of came to the kind of conclusion, I wanted that to be almost like a surprise, you know. So I wanted, if you see the John Glenn's name on there, you know, oh, the first thing I'm going to see is that. But when people aren't expecting it, and the first thing you see is that photo of him raising his glass, you kind of like, it's like, oh, here we go. Because when I saw that was the picture that Martin was going to use in there, even I thought, when I first saw the proofs, I thought, oh, here we go, this is going to be good. Like that, and I'm thinking, well, I've written it, but having that kind of endorsement and John's involvement in there, and as well, the other thing that he's very modest about and doesn't get mentioned enough, I don't think, is the fact that as well as the Roger films, he had a small part in Pierce Brosnan becoming Bond, because he shot the screen test back in the day, you know, back before, you know, the Remington Steel clause and contract prevented him from becoming Bond then. It was fantastic to, you know, have his endorsement in there and his smiling face, you know, raising the glass. It was just great. And just talking about, you know, Rog, you know, like he says, now he was a good lad, old Rog, like that, you know. It's just, yeah, what more can you say?
Well, that's come through the book, like, there's so many accounts and individual encounters with Roger on set.
Yeah.
Just comes across as the real gent that we know he is. You know, you sometimes worry that you're going to hear a bad story about him, but I'm yet to hear each of them. He gave time to, he chatted to, he doesn't take himself seriously. You know, we spoke to Dell and he was just joking again about his lack of acting, which of course we don't agree with. But I don't know, it makes it more special that it was a Roger film in a way that predominantly here. Because I think out of all the Bond actors, he's the one who's embraced the fans and the community the most.
Yeah, I think you're right. I wasn't fortunate enough to meet him, but I was fortunate enough to be at one of the audience with shows that he did, which was on the last tour that he did. I think I might have, there's a brief mention of it in the book. And you know, that day when I saw him, it was in Norwich, and it was an afternoon performance. It was the only one, I think, of that tour that was like an afternoon with, rather than an evening with Sir Roger. And so, which was good. So that meant that I could take my young son with me. So my son kind of came with me at the time. I think he was, some might have been seven, I think, at the time. And he'd seen a couple of the, you know, Roger films, and, you know, a lot of the show kind of went over his head and everything. But you know, it's one of those moments as a, you know, Bond fan, father to son and all the rest of it. But what was great about Roger on that bit is that just to be in the same room, and you know, he got a standing ovation just for walking onto the stage before he'd even said anything, to be able to kind of, you know, be part of that and you know, give him that love back to him. That, you know, it was fantastic. And, you know, full credit to Gareth Owen for, you know, arranging those tours and giving us the fans a chance to, you know, bask in that, you know, and because, you know, I don't know if we're ever gonna, you know, any of the other Bonds where that's ever likely to happen again. I don't know. I mean, Daniel's done a couple of those sort of, you know, show, you know, as part of the, you know, promotional work that he's done. I'd love Pierce to, you know, to do it. That the one that he, you know, when he did the Golden Eye in lockdown, when he did the commentary, you know, I'd love Pierce to sort of, you know, if can you imagine that if he did like a theatre tour, an audience with just, yeah. Wow.
You know, some of the chapters in here, they bring it right back to what filmmaking was like. So there's like stuff about the call sheets, which probably see in the same way now. And they're unbelievable to look at. So it's got basically scheduling the day. And this must have been a massive job for the assistant, where everybody had to be in the right place at the right time. Roger had to be picked up at a certain time by a certain driver. There's about three or four hotels nearby that they're all.
Yeah.
Also, Gotell, he had to be picked up. Lord Adams, Mir Bedi, Stephen Burkoff, and Rigmarole to get everybody in the same place. They're quite extensive scenes, aren't they? There's a good chunk of the film.
Yeah, it's surprising when you know look at it. I think that the screen time, the railway stuff, the railway features, it's something. It's maybe I think something like 14 or 15 minutes. I think there's a good, yeah. But in terms of, you know, the time scale that they, again, it's one of those things that locally as well as like nationally, with Bond fans know, I think the majority of them know that they film the train scenes at Neen Valley Railway. Whether they know exactly where Neen Valley Railway is you know, some people do, some people don't. But locally, it's just sort of one of those things that over the years, it was, you know, it's just sort of, oh yeah, they filmed it there. But when I talk to people, I'm like, no, they went there they were there for like, you know, 8 weeks,
yeah.
You know, prior to that, which is going into the detail in the book about, you know, the railway staff that were involved in, you know, helping set the whole, you know, build some of the, you know, there was railway track, there were certain bits that needed to be built that were used in the film. And, you know, as you know, the way filmmaking was back then, the credits of the film nowadays, if it had been filmed at the railway, all these people that are in the book, that they'd be mentioned on the end credits. I mean, some of them are mentioned on the call sheets, which is, you know, great for them, and it kind of shows how much crews at the time, you know, the second unit, how much, you know, appreciation they kind of felt, and also that a lot of the, you know, these railway guys, particularly those three or four of them, were heavily involved and, you know, were basically part of the crew. Because, you know, the thing is, when I was a kid growing up, I just assumed incorrectly that all the stuff that the stunt guys were driving the train, that the stunt guys were doing everything, because it was like, well, why wouldn't they be? Because it's like a train and it is quite dangerous. So why would they not be, you know, driving the train? But it was like, no, it was the, you know, the guys from the railway who were all, you know, sort of train drivers and firemen and guards and everything. They were all doing it and involved. And what's great as well is that, you know, there was when you talk to some of them, there was sort of like a fairly strict edict given to them that they weren't to take photographs. And I think, you know, some of the photographs in there, the majority of the photographs that in the book sort of from the second unit. So after the first unit was there for a week with John Glenn, then they went off to India, and then Arthur Worcester took over, you know, directing the second unit stuff. And they were there for, you know, sort of six. I think it was the second to last week of October when they finally sort of finished. And obviously they weren't filming. It's not every single day they were filming. There's some days where, you know, the weather wasn't right or whatever. It wasn't sort of 7 days a week, but it was pretty, you know, pretty much every day that they were filming something down there, the train scenes, you know, up and down on the track, and yeah, getting everything right. And then obviously they'd view the rushes and then they'd change things. And so there's, you know, mentions you know, of that in the book. But what I really tried to capture in the book, Tom, is normally when you read a book about behind the scenes stories from Bond, it's from the perspective of, yeah, the actors and the crew. Just the people that we've seen on the end credits of the films. But what I really wanted to do with this, because I wanted the book to be about the railway as well. So I wanted to sort of these almost kind of like, you know, some of the extras as well. You just see them for a split second in the film. So it was great to be able to kind of pinpoint who these people were. And that was a lot of fun, because there wasn't anything on any of the call sheets. No one had got like a list to go, okay, who were all the people, the local guys and men and women who are extras? Here's a list. A lot of it was trying to track people down on, you know, asking people, who do you know was in it? Do you remember who this person was? So yeah, that was, you know, there was a lot of work that kind of went into that.
One of the chaps, it's a chap called Ken Burns,
Ken. Oh, yeah.
Stories of, well, it basically sounds like an episode of Ricky Gervais's Extras.
Yeah. It does, yeah. Yeah, 100%. The Tale of the Left-Handed Soldier. Yeah, Ken was, I was so pleased to track Ken down, because he was very elusive.
Oh, right.
For a long time. You know, for the benefit of people listening, Ken Burns, for anyone who's got the Ultimate Edition DVDs or Blu-rays, there's one of the extra features, I should say, on there is something called Ken Burns. I think it's called Ken Burns On-Set Movie. Basically, Ken was an extra, and then he had like a little cine camera, and he filmed some of the second unit scenes. And then, sort of years later, they got in touch with him. I think when they were putting the DVDs together, when John Cort was doing the sort of Inside Octopussy documentaries, and they used that on the film. So yeah, Ken, it was fantastic to get Ken back. Ken came to the event, and obviously to have him interviewed in the book as well, because he's kind of like the one extra that I think Bond fans will know of, because he's, you know, he's on the DVD kind of thing. But yeah, Ken, you know, Ken's a great guy, and it was great to sort of have him on there and have him tell his story in a bit more detail than he goes into on the DVD documentary.
15, wasn't he? I think, and he tended to be older than he was.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. And that as soon as he told me that, as soon as he told me his age, it just, you know, we've all, you know, we grew up with these stories of, the, you know, we kind of like laugh a little bit about it. But I think, like I put in the book, you know, no wartime story is complete without somebody pretending to, you know, lying about how old they are because they want to join up. You know, in real wars, that kind of happens. And this was, you know, he just wanted to be in the film. You know, he had to lie about that he was older than he was. He was, you know, he was a few months shy of his 16th birthday. I think he was like 16 in the October, sort of when they were looking for extras. It was like August, so he was still kind of officially 15. But he just kept pestering, you know, ringing up the production office. And, well, yeah, the story, the way he tells it is in the book, and he tells it in a really, you know, great way, that they just finally went, oh, come on, let's just give him something to do just to stop him hassling us, kind of thing.
Well, the full story, because like you say, Ken, he tells it so well, and these chapters are so brilliant individually. And you can go back and forth with the book. It's not a book really that you'd perhaps read in one sitting. You know, you could read a chapter here, a chapter there, revisit it.
Have you got to the end of it, or are you just sort of dipped in and out?
Dipped in and out, but I have got. I wanted to give a full picture of it. Another funny story was that the premieres of these films. Can you tell us a little bit about those? Because I thought that was very funny.
Yeah, the local premiere, you mean? Yeah. Well, there's sort of two sides to that. So after the film had been, you know, completed, some of the railway guys were invited to the crew screening,
yes,
sort of in London, which again kind of shows, you know, how appreciative the, you know, Eon and the crew, the main, you know, first, second unit, you know, John Glenn's crew were of their involvement. But then there was, like what happens normally, there was a local premiere that they had, a regional, I guess it was called like a regional premiere, that was put on at the local Odeon in Peterborough. And that was sort of arranged by the Odeon manager and the local radio station, who sort of ran it and did it as like a charity event, basically. Back then, the Odeon manager had quite a good working relationship because the Odeon chain was where the Bond films were predominantly shown back then. I mean, obviously they still are, but they had the Odeon sort of cinemas had a good working relationship with Eon's marketing team. Jeff Freeman, I think, was the publicity manager there, and Mike Turner, who was the Odeon manager at Peterbrook, which is the local cinema where I saw the film at, he'd met and he knew Jeff. So they were, when they arranged the local premiere, he was able to get Desmond Llewellyn to come along.
Yeah, that, how good's that?
To the local premiere, which, you know, it's an interesting one because to us now, you just, you know, it's the equivalent now of the last film, like Ben Whishaw turning up at your local cinema, isn't it?
It is. Thing. History he's had with the franchise. You know, how many films has he's been in more Bond films than anyone, I think. So
I think you're right. Yeah, yeah. And you know, he was obviously a big draw. And interestingly, he hadn't filmed anything at the he hadn't filmed any scenes at the railway. So I think as well, that was kind of nice in a way because the people who were, you know, going to the premiere, they'd met, they'd seen Roger, they'd seen some of the other kind of stars already. And that was, you know, almost the one star of the film that they hadn't filmed any of his scenes there. So it was great that he kind of came along to the premiere. He brought his box of tricks, his you know, gadget case, and he did like a little demonstration, you know, showed that, and the, you know, the radio, Francis, it was the radio presenter sort of, you know, interviewed him in front of the, you know, screen before the lights went down and everything. And, you know, Desmond, you know, went through and talked about some of the gadgets, etc. Yeah, so there was I won't tell you that because it's in the book, and if people haven't read the book, there was someone else who came to the premiere who at the time wasn't an actor, but was very prevalent in sort of British culture, yeah, in the 90s. So yeah, that I was amazed when I found that out, and
yeah,
there was, you know, photographic evidence of it as well to back it up. I had such a great time as a kid kind of growing up and seeing these films at the cinema. And again, the story that the cinema manager, Mike Turner, tells is in the book. And that was another great advantage, sort of having him involved with it, because, it adds a little bit more, you know, dimension. So it's not just the railway. It's kind of like the film was made. What next? We're going to show the film. How was it shown? So yeah, it was great that I was able to sort of get him and he tell some stories. And he was he was and still is a big Bond fan. You know, he still sort of, you know, he messages me whenever he goes to see a film, and, you know, basically still giving me cinema advice of what I should and shouldn't be seeing at the cinema all these years later, kind of thing. So it's really nice that it sort of brought out these stories in people, and people, you know, are appreciative, and also people are, I don't know, just happy that they've got this little bit of involvement with the Bond films, you know. And yeah, there's just like great stories all the way through from that. But yeah, the cinema screening, you know, when I think back, and I wish I could remember more, but I was so young at the time, I've just got vague memories of it. But the fact that Desmond Llewellyn, now Q, was there, you know, he didn't arrive by hot air balloon and land on the cinema roof. It was really good. It was really good to sort of, you know, track these stories down, because a lot of these things are, over the years, these stories that are in the book, the people, they've become kind of like anecdotes that people will tell their families and a few of their friends, and they've all heard them. You know, they've all heard these stories, and they're just one-off. But when you've got 20, 30 different stories and accounts of various things that kind of happened involving the film, it really builds up to something.
Yeah, it does.
Quite special, I think. And a little bit, I can't think of any other location, apart from Pinewood probably, yeah, that has kind of, somebody's done this sort of thing. And that's not me sort of being like, you know, big-headed. It's just, you know, I wanted to sort of, you know, celebrate the railway, the men and women who built it, and then these men and women who, you know, if you apply to be an extra in a film, you've got to have a little bit something about you. You've got to be a little bit extrovert. You've got to, and everybody did it for a different reason, but everybody's really proud that if you're going to be, like one of them says, if you're going to be an extra in a Bond film, that's something that not many people can say, you know. And it's the one that still gets railway. It's the one that still gets talked about the most.
It is. It charts it from start to finish, like you say.
Yeah.
The railway itself, the filming of it, and then the premieres. And the other, it was the other premiere I was thinking of, the GoldenEye one.
Oh, GoldenEye. Yeah, yeah. That, I remember that more. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was a certain sitcom star that was. He was very.
Yes, there was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a sitcom. So yeah, after you know, 13 years kind of previously, I'd sat there and seen, you know, Desmond Llewellyn Q as being the, you know, the guest. Okay, there's going to be like a VIP guest coming to see this one. Who's it going to be? Is Desmond coming back? No, he's not. It's that, you know, with the mayor at the back, and it was Geoffrey Hughes. People in Britain will know Geoffrey Hughes, you know, for three characters. He was Twiggy in The Royal Family.
Yep.
And at the time, he played Onslow, who was like the slobbish layabout brother or brother-in-law of Hyacinth Bouquet in Keeping Up Appearances.
Why is Onslow reading the Financial Times?
I like to keep an eye on the economy. A bloke in my position has to wonder how long the country can afford him. If we don't get the economy right, people like me are going to be in trouble. It's the duty of all of us to be concerned about the shrinking pound.
And when I married him, I thought he was just a sex symbol.
Before that, he played a bin man in Coronation Street. It was Eddie Yates. And he lived locally. So they used to, every time there was like a fete or anything that was kind of going on, they would kind of not wheel him out, but he would, you know, make himself available for charity events kind of thing. So when I saw him there, I was immediately thinking, oh, he must have a part in this film, right? He's got to be in it. So is he going to be, you know, Q's clueless assistant? Yeah. You know, is Xenia going to be crushing him between her legs or something? You know, so the first screening of the film, you know, I really enjoyed it, but at the back of my head, I'm thinking, when's he going to turn up? What's he going to be doing? And then when I didn't see him in it, I thought, oh, maybe I've missed him. I'll have to, you know, I wanted to see the film again anyway, but, you know, when I saw it again, I thought, oh, I'll have to look closer to see if he's in it. So, yeah, that was quite funny. Because, and again, you know, again, back then, this was pre-internet, so you wouldn't know necessarily everybody who was going to be in the film at that point. So,
while we're mentioning Golden, can you tell us? It was a bit more low-key, wasn't it? So there weren't as many staff who were in the making of GoldenEye. But, you know, again, some key scenes in the film that were filmed at Nene Valley. So just tell us a bit more about that, Mark.
Yeah, so they came back in sort of, I think, like late 94, early 95, to do with like a recce of the railway. The railway scenes in the film are with Trevelyan's sort of armoured train. So you see it in the film, the first time you see the train in the film, it's when Ormerov is taking Natalia sort of after the tank chase in to Petersburg and Leavesden. They get her out of the car and they sort of put her on the train, and the train kind of pulls out of the train depot. And that was filmed at the British Sugar Factory sidings, which are sort of adjacent to the Nene Valley Railway.
You brought me the perfect gift, General Orlov. You've made me a very unhappy man.
Mishkin got to them before I could.
Bond is alive.
He escaped.
Good for Bond. Bad for you. Take a seat, my dear. Now, James and I shared everything. Absolutely everything. To the victor go the spoils. You like it where we're going? Me.
And then you see when the train's hurtling down the track, again, that's at Neen Valley. And it's kind of going in, they've sort of filmed that in almost the opposite direction that they filmed Octopussy. So if you, the bit when in Octopussy, you've got the circus train as it crosses the border, it's going on the screen, it's sort of going from, where are we? Yeah, right to left. And then in the film, it's going the other, in the GoldenEye, they're filming the opposite direction at that particular part of the track at Ferry Meadow Station. And then you get this confrontation where you've got, which is a mixture of like model work that was done at Leavesden with Derek Meddings, and then live pieces with the train that was done at another bit of the track, which is up at Castle Mill Road Bridge.
Bond. Only Bond.
He's going to derail us.
Full speed!
Jump!
Full speed! Ram him!
So basically they built, Peter Lamont and his team, they built almost like a fake tunnel entrance over a bridge. So although there's a tunnel, you see the tunnel in Octopussy where they switch the carriages, they made this tunnel elsewhere. So it was just like a normal bridge. And it's one of the bridges that in the film, in Octopussy, where he comes out the top of the hatch after he's out of the gorilla suit. He ducks down under a bridge. So it's one of those bridges that they use, and they build it to look like the mouth of a tunnel. And there's, you know, photographs I've got in the book of it and under construction. They filmed sort of part of the explosion with Bond sort of escaping with Natalia and
the tunnel, and he gets out of it, and then the train.
Pierce was there. Pierce was there. I think he was only there for a day to film his stuff, because it's literally jumps out the train. You see him kind of crouch down side of the track, and then it's sort of a mixture of model work and live action with some of the explosions bits that they filmed. And then he's got the, when he's with Natalia, when they're sort of having a little, at the end, boys with toys. So he has a little, he has a little smooch up next to the railway track.
Do you destroy every vehicle you get into?
Standard operating procedure. Boys with toys.
Maybe I should take care of the transportation for our trip to Cuba.
Our trip?
Do you know how to disarm the weapon?
I suppose that depends on what kind of weapon you're talking about disarming.
So? Tell me, are there any other standard operating procedures I should be aware of, Commander?
Thousands. But I only pay them. Lip service.
These two films, they're in my top five, or whatever, top favourite Bond films. And Octopussy was probably the one we watched most as kids. So it really
opened
the first one we all saw at the cinema. So it meant so much to us. That scene where they sort of jump out of the way of the explosion and then have the kiss with the night music going on is filmed at Neen Valley. It's just brilliant.
I know. Yeah, it is. It's, yeah. You know, look, imagine, so going back to, you know, me as a, you know, I think it was like 21, 22 when I was watching it with my mates at the cinema, thinking, oh, when's he coming into it? But again, knowing that they'd filmed stuff at the railway, but not knowing when it was going to be in it.
Yeah.
So as soon as the tank kind of like appears in it, because I'd seen some pictures in the local press that they'd done a bit with a tank. As soon as I saw the tank appear and a tank chase, I mean, that bit when the tank just, when he just drives through the wall, you know, it's like Bond is driving a freaking tank. You know, I can remember the time thinking, how cool is that? You know, there's two bits in that, the bit with the tank and also the bit where you're seeing when he comes out the top of the tank, out of the, you know, the turret, and he's got the Kalashnikov, he's got the rifle, just, you know, Pierce's got his Brioni suit on there and he's got the rifle. It's just like, that is, to me, it's like, that is the epitome of like 90s cool.
Absolutely.
You know, just, you know, it's, I think it's one of the, to me, it's one of those, you know, when you see like those montages of, you know, oh yeah, we love 1990s and, you know, there's music bands and everything like that. That Pierce, that bit of him there, that's just, you know, the whole thing with GoldenEye, everything that's, I think a lot of the love for GoldenEye comes as well from the, you know, the video game as well. Just the name GoldenEye, it just means so much. The film, the video game, the connection to Fleming as well, you know, Fleming's home. It's just, yeah, they really, you know, when they came up with that title, it's just like, yeah, do you know what I mean? We've done something good here that we've put this down as a marker that, you know, thank goodness we've come up with this before someone else took it, kind of thing.
Just got to say to everybody, this book, Train on the Tracks, is terrific. I'd like to, you know, endorse it as a podcast as well. And John Glenn, of course, has loved it. He's got, I'm sure you gave him a copy when you saw him as well.
Yeah. John's got a copy. Yeah, definitely.
It's absolutely fantastic. And it's worth, I'm sure there'll be more events perhaps in the future. We're saying, before long, it'll be the 50th anniversary of Octopussy. Some of the people will still be with us, and I'm sure we will try and go, because it was sold out last time, so we missed it, unfortunately.
Yeah, hopefully we can do some more stuff. You know, we've got the other thing that I was thinking about the other day, you know, we've got, you know, not far away from the 30th anniversary of GoldenEye, believe it or not, are we?
Well, there we go.
25, oh my goodness.
Exciting that bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, Isabella, go, Mark, and I'll definitely be there.
Yeah, that would be, again, yeah, well, if somebody wants to, you know, please, yeah, get in touch, tell me. Get her to come back. I'm more than happy to, yeah, show her around and everything else. But yeah, I mean, like, just sort of bringing it sort of, I guess, kind of like full circle with the Dineen Valley, although it's not been used in a, you know, Bond film since, I think it's great that there's still this attention on it. And, you know, I get messages from, you know, people, you know, wanting to, you know, come to visit or wanting to know things and stuff like that. And it's still used as a film location. So whether it will be ever used again in the Bond films, who knows, you know, never say never. It's still being used. It was used earlier this year by the BBC in the TV series Silent Witness. They came back, do some stuff. And just before lockdown, EastEnders filmed here as well. So yeah, it's still a place that attracts, you know, TV and films. Yeah, long may it continue. If you, you know, you're down this way or you want to visit, yeah, just let me know and we can have a look around.
The book, could you just tell us where we find the book if you want to get our hands on it?
The book is on Martin's, on the tracks of 007.com. So it's available on there. So you can go onto the website and purchase it there. Yeah, and there's some other great location books as well that Martin's done. You know, Simon Firth as well. I think he's maybe on his fourth now. So there's some other good, you know, books from other locations that are a little bit more glamorous than the Dineen Valley on the outskirts of Peterborough. You know, thanks for this chat. It's been really good. You know, it's always good to talk about Bond with new friends,
yes,
as well as old friends. So yeah, here's to us. Yeah.
No, thanks so much, Mark, and I'm sure we'll see you in person at a Bond event very soon. Really, Douglas.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. and it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.